Hello, I'm Zol Patek-Falvey. This is episode number 0428 of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. And here it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0428. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet singer Erin Dickens, one of the founding members of Manhattan Transfer, as she talks about her new solo album, Vignettes.
This is the first self-produced album I've released, and it was a big step for me. You know, it was terrifying and exhilarating and empowering, and it was the first time I didn't have a producer telling me what I couldn't do. So that was my starting point. I drew from a lot of different genres that I love, songs that I've known for years that I'm crazy about, and also collaborative ventures with the different musicians that I worked with, because I wanted these collaborations, these vignettes, if you will, to each reflect both of us. In other words, my musicians weren't backing me up, we were creating together.
Peter Lincoln from The American Tailgater talks about the lure of football tailgating.
Well, you'll look at certain tailgates. I mean, Northwestern football wasn't that good, and people, they won't even be going into the games. They'd be coming to the parking lot 4 hours before games started, and they would just never go in. And I think it's just the camaraderie and the community that people can go to this parking lot, hang out, party for 2 hours, and just forget about everything else and all the nonsense. I think that's the best part about it, is the community and the people that, you know, everyone's in the same mood and happy, and there's none of that BS that we can find in the world today.
Stuart Nullman is in with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman. Book Banter would like to introduce to you British police detective Roy Grace and his series of best-selling mystery novels with his debut book, Dead Simple. Let's go to Brighton and get on the case very shortly on the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0428 was Zol Patek-Falvey, who is a former TV director and the best local director I ever worked with. He had a vision and a precision of directing a show that was simply, well, breathtaking. If there were more like him, ENG shows everywhere would be spectacular. Pleasure to know you, Zolt. Even a greater pleasure to work with you. Thank you very much for doing the guest late on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A great-grandmother in Pennsylvania celebrated her 94th birthday by crossing skydiving off her bucket list. Ela Campbell of Williamsport decided to take the 10,000-foot plunge because she might not make it for another year. Campbell was joined by her granddaughter, Sarah Schulke, and great-granddaughter, Jess Fox, for the dive over Hazleton. This was her bucket list, and there was no way I was missing the most incredible matriarch jumping for one of the greatest families, Schulke said. I wasn't going to miss it. Campbell was thrilled by the experience and said it won't be her last time skydiving. The free fall is kind of a wow. The wind is so terrific. It was great, and I loved it. I'll do it again, she said. Gee, have you noticed there are more and more stories these days of people nearing the century mark who want to jump out of airplanes? It's ironic, since regular commercial flights weren't readily available when these people were born. How do you go from being in awe of mankind finally and actually getting off the ground to wanting to leap out of a perfectly functioning plane? Yeah. Anyway, remember when people used to say that you shouldn't talk about politics, money, or religion in public? Well, this story hits that latter topic. A man began reading aloud from his Bible on a subway train outside Wimbledon Station in London, England. When the man got to "Death is not the end," passengers panicked and forced the train's doors open to escape. When commuters self-evacuated, as police described it, the rail power lines were cut, disrupting service along the line for nearly 12 hours. According to one passenger identified only as Ian, someone asked the man to stop reading as he was scaring people, and the guy stopped and stood there with his head down. No one was injured or arrested, but the rail line experienced significant delays even after service was restored. You know, there's a lot of scary stuff in the Bible, but usually it doesn't flip people out this way. I'm guessing this guy isn't going to get a job narrating audiobooks, or announcing subway stops for that matter. And one of those other topics you shouldn't be talking about, politics, so let's tackle that one right now, shall we? On a Friday afternoon, business partners Christopher Smith and Jay Warren posted on a Facebook page for their restaurant, which is called Cut It Up American Grill, or Cup It Up, rather, American Grill. That's in Tucson, Arizona. The post included their support for President Donald Trump and appealing Obamacare. It also expressed opposition to fake news and global warming as a scientific story, and said the restaurant would no longer broadcast NFL games while players were allowed to kneel during the national anthem. The post prompted an immediate backlash on social media, including calls to boycott the restaurant and threatening phone calls. Operating partner and chef Julian Alarcon resigned, along with several other employees, over the weekend, though there were no violent incidents. By Monday, the restaurant had closed permanently. In a statement released on Saturday, the pair apologized. "We assume there would be some discussion and shares," the statement said, "but never this type of animosity and hostility." Really? Are you new to Facebook? Wow. In social media, there are two sides of the political debate. Both sides think they're right. Both sides think the other side are idiots. Both sides want to use a scorched earth policy to eradicate the other side. But hey, this kind of reaction never flares up on Facebook. Oh, no. No, 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 no. We have time for one more story before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, and still with the question of politics, you know, that topic you're never really supposed to talk about a lot in public. Lately, people have been questioning the quality of those who run for public office. It seems we're not getting the best or the brightest or even the most sane. Here's the latest example. A New York City mayoral candidate says he's shocked. Shocked, I say, think the movie Casablanca, that so little attention has been paid to his arrest for trying to hijack an airliner at gunpoint 17 years ago. In July 2000, Aaron Comey boarded a National Airlines flight in New York and ordered the pilots to fly to Argentina or Antarctica. I hope he was dressed for either or. It never took off and nobody was injured. He was acquitted by reason of insanity in 2003 and was released from a prison medical facility in 2015. The libertarian candidate tells the news magazine City and State New York that it's reasonable for voters to wonder if he's suited for office. He says he has fully recovered and is committed to nonviolence. Wow. Comey says he has experienced and witnessed injustice and wants to change the system. That's right, folks. We are now down to voting for someone, an attempted hijacker, who was deemed by the state to be insane. Let that sink in, voters. Go to the polls with pride. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Aaron Dickens was an original and founding member of Manhattan Transfer, that excellent jazz vocal group founded in 1969 that dominated music charts over many different genres. She has just released her own album this month called Vignettes, and she joins us right now on the line just outside of Philadelphia. Hi, Aaron.
Hey, how you doing? Good to be here.
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for taking the time to be on the program. There's a mix in this album called Vignettes. What is the process for you in putting together or deciding which songs culminate and come together as an album, as a CD?
Well, this is the first self-produced album I've released, and it was a big step for me. You know, it was terrifying and exhilarating and empowering, and it was the first time I didn't have a producer telling me what I couldn't do. So that was my starting point. I drew from a lot of different genres that I love, songs that I've known for years that I'm crazy about, and also collaborative ventures with the different musicians that I worked with, because I wanted these collaborations, these vignettes, if you will, to each reflect both of us. In other words, my musicians weren't backing me up. We were creating together.
Now, I understand you didn't have to go too far to record this. You live in a renovated farmhouse, and you have your own recording studio?
I do, except for, actually, we went all over the planet to do the tracking. Elliot Randall from Steely Dan lives in London, and David Friedman, the vibraphonist, I met in Miami, and we recorded in Nashville. I went to Honolulu, of all things, Austin, Texas, Philly, New York. So we recorded the tracks all over the place where the guys were. And then we brought the tracks home, and I did all my vocals at home, and then sent them off to London to a wonderful mix engineer named Wes Mabe, who did the sonic imprint and made it all come together cohesively.
As someone who is producing her album by herself this time, as you said, you didn't use producers, people who know you, friends of yours, people who are close to you, when they hear this song, or these songs rather, do they get a sense of your mood, of a story that you want to tell, of feelings that you have, or a period of life that you're going through?
I think it's less specific to a period or a theme than the comments that I get back mostly are that it is so uniquely me and so clearly my energy because I didn't have any really restraints on it. So they get vibrance and joy and real authenticity because really, every step of the way, it was sort of my call, you know, so... It was a bit of a change.
I'm going to add another word, perky. It's toe tapping, and it's the kind of person. It's the kind of music that when you hear it, you know, when you're in a crowd and you get on a bus or something, and you're worried about who's going to be sitting next to you. It's like, oh, I want that person to sit next to me. Or when you were in school and you're looking for somebody to sit next to in the lunchroom. It's like, I want to sit next to her.
I don't know. I'm better now, but I tell you, when I was a kid, I don't know how my parents put up with me. I was so perky.
We have to go back a little bit and talk about the Manhattan Transfer. I mean, that was a group that, as I said, dominated the music charts over many different genres. At a time when many people try to pigeonhole performers into one group or another, you guys came out and did everything. Did that make it easier? Did that make it harder to break through? Is that one of the situations where perhaps if you knew then what you know now, you wouldn't have done it that way?
Well, I think, we were definitely strange. There's no doubt about it. And we were doing, and frankly, I haven't changed. I did the same thing on this new record. We did country, we did folk, we did rock, we did blues, we did jazz, we did all of it with those sort of trademark harmonies. And I think on a certain level, it opened doors for us because we were just so weird. But I don't think we were so young and everything, we didn't really think anything about it. We were just, oh, we have a record deal. Oh, we're touring. It's just everything is as it should be. We never even thought about it until, later you look back and you say, whoa.
What was the genesis of what is clearly a very open idea toward musical styles and tastes? What did you listen to growing up that helped to develop your style and who you became?
Well, my mom really loved the theater, so she brought home lots of soundtracks from Broadway shows and films. So I had that sort of thing that I sang a lot of that when I was young. And Tony Bennett and that sort of thing, Barbara Streisand, she brought those records home. But my dad was a really talented amateur jazz pianist. And so I got a lot of input from him. And then when I got to be a teenager, I would lock the door to my bedroom with my record player and play, you know, Bob Dylan and Dave Van Ronk and all the folk music, much to the complete horror of my parents. So I kind of started out liking all of it. I mean, I had, you know, listened to jazz before the Manhattan Transfer came to be, so it was natural for me to fit into that, and I'd already sung a lot of harmony. So, but I like it all. I love singing rock. I toured with Greg Allman. That was one of the most fun things I've ever done in my life.
Did you find that when you hung out in schools or met other kids that your musical taste seemed to be much more far-wielding and progressive than most people? I mean, a lot of people seem to stay, and I'm not even talking about performers, I'm just talking about musical fans. A lot of people seem to stay in their lane.
I think as a listener, left to my own devices, I stayed in my lane. I liked Peter, Paul, and Mary, and I liked Judy Collins, and I liked Joni Mitchell, and I liked Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and I liked all the, exactly who you were supposed to like if you were, you know, coming up in that era. But I'd had so much access to an influence by people who loved more sophisticated music, and not to say that Joni Mitchell isn't about as sophisticated as you get. You know, I think that I had a bigger sphere, but I don't think I necessarily exercised it because I loved the messaging and all those songs and those groups.
I know when somebody records something, when creates something, it is like their own children. So perhaps this is an unfair question, but do you have favorites of the stuff that you've done over the years, either as a solo artist or with Manhattan Transfer? What do you listen to? What do you keep hitting replay on of your own music?
Oh, my gosh, that's a tough one. Well, I always had a soft spot for Java Jive. And, in fact, I re-recorded that in 2013 with Tim Hauser and all the original voices, and that, sadly, was the last recording that he made. We lost him 3 years ago. So that was really, really special and full circle, and hearing those voices together again after all those years was just bliss. And I also like this Cab Calloway thing called Use a Viper, which is a very naughty song, which we did on the first record. And that of the Manhattan Transfer. Of my own stuff, it's hard to say. You know, I like so many styles. I love to sing in French, so I'd say the song A Bicyclette on this new record is really special to me.
One of the things that's special to me, I like the song Errand Girl for Rhythm. We're going to play that as we lead out of our little chat here. But the album itself is called Vignettes. It's now available. Does that mean that with the album you'll be touring?
Yes, I'm doing just a little sort of celebratory trip out to L.A. and doing a celebratory concert and some TV and stuff at the beginning of November. I'll be at Vitello's on November 5th. And then we're working on Europe in the spring. I tour a lot in Europe, and I don't know what my manager has, you know, in store after that, because Europe was next up. So we'll see, you know, where we go from there.
Are the audiences different where you go, be it, you know, North America, Europe, wherever you might travel, or are the music fans just music fans everywhere? It's universal.
I think specifically speaking to jazz, that in Europe, the audiences are much more serious about it. They are real jazz heads, and they listen intently. They ask you a lot of questions. They always buy the CD. They're really focused on it. It's sacred to them. And I think there's more devotion to it there than here. But frankly, once you're in the room with people, you know, we're all together feeling the joy and the love and enjoying music, and so it's a good thing no matter really where you are.
Does that devotion surprise you, considering America is the birthplace of jazz, but it seems to be almost like a religion in Europe?
I know, right? Well, you know, I think part of it is things we don't give in this country We don't give fair due to arts. And, you know, when you see music and arts being cut from school, classes in schools are being cut, first thing that goes is the music and the arts. And so kids aren't getting a cherished education in music and art, and they don't have the dedication to it. And that's been going on for generations now, you know. So I think people love music just as much here, but I also think there's a feeling of, ownership, in that, you know, we can download stuff for free or stream it on Spotify for free. And there's not really an understanding that the artists are out there, you know, making this music and need to be, you know, paid and respected. And so it's a little bit different. I don't think there's a lack of love, but I think we don't give it its due in our educational systems, so that filters down.
Well, one thing that should get its due is the new album. It's called Vignettes. It is done by Erin Dickens. Everyone knows her from Manhattan Transfer. Erin, thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Really fun to talk to you, Peter, and I love Montreal.
Erin Dickens, whose new album is entitled Vignettes. As promised, here is a little taste of what you'll find on the CD. This is just a little bit of Erin Girl for Rhythm from Erin's album. Enjoy.
Here's something that I'd like to bring to you. Wrapped all in cellophane, designed for you. Tell you what it's all about. It is without a doubt. Swinging the latest style. Service with a smile. Jumping with my voices. If you want to swing and shout, get your kicks and get about. I'm an errand girl for rhythm. Send me. Just get it and follow through. I'll deliver straight to you. I'm an errand girl for rhythm. Send me. You can always find me down at Smokey Joe's. That's the place where every gal and gator goes.
Real cool, crazy.
If you want variety, take a tip and call on me. I'm an errand girl for rhythm. Send me. If you want to swing and shout, get your hip and get about. I'm an errand girl for rhythm. Send me. Lace your boots and follow through. I'll deliver straight for you. I'm an errand girl for rhythm. Send me. You can always find me down at Smokey Joe's. That's the place where every gal and gator goes.
Real cool, crazy.
If you want variety, take a tip and call on me. I'm an errand girl for rhythm. Send me. Errand girl for rhythm, oh yeah.
That's just a taste of Erin Girl for Rhythm from Erin Dickens' new album, Vignettes. There's a lot more where that came from. Visit Erin's website at erindickensmusic.com to find out where you can buy her music and where she'll be touring. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0428, and you'll find the link.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
Yeah.
on the air on stations in Singapore, New Zealand, and America, and streaming through your computer. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll share the lure of football tailgater parties, plus Stuart Nolman will be along with another edition of Book Banter. We have an idiot of the day coming your way and lots more Stuff File news here on a program that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, a 10-year-old boy is accused of stealing his mother's car from their Cleveland home and leading police on a high-speed chase. Authorities say the chase itself began in Westlake and ended at mile marker 121 on the Ohio Turnpike, which is near Sandusky. At times, the boy drove at speeds of up to 100 miles per hour along the turnpike. After making eye contact with the boy during the chase, a trooper signaled him to pull over. The boy shook his head no, according to authorities. After going off the side of the roadway, a cruiser crashed into the vehicle and brought the chase to an end as the boy tried to re-enter the turnpike. The boy was combative after the chase concluded, allegedly spitting and kicking at authorities. Again, may I remind you, he is only 10. Cleveland police say this is the second incident involving the same child. Oh, I'm thinking it might be safe to say that in 6 years, he won't be getting his first driver's license. In fact, I don't think he'll be getting out much, period, over the next little while. The Cristo Rey Jesuit High School in Baltimore, Maryland, was evacuated after a strange odor overwhelmed students and staff. Several were coughing and reporting difficulty breathing. The fire department responded with its hazmat team, triaged dozens of school employees and students who inhaled the apparently toxic fumes, and transported two students and three adults to a hospital for further treatment. As firefighters set up heavy-duty fans to air out the building, a firefighter found the source of the fumes, a plug-in air freshener that was set to pump pumpkin spice smells into the air every several minutes. You can have fresh air, or you can have chemical scents, but you can't simultaneously have both. Which gives me a chance to rail against what has become a scourge during the Halloween season: the commercial overuse of pumpkin spices. Every ad seems to depict products that feature it in or on something. I'm surprised they haven't made pumpkin-flavored condoms. And before you jump up and down and say, "Wait a minute, I read about those," no. Stop right there. The story about pumpkin-flavored condoms is a hoax. But the fact that the hoax has spread proves how much people seem to want to flock to pumpkin-flavored or scented anything at this time of the year. And still with Halloween, residents in Rogersville, Missouri are protesting a high school fundraising plan to convert an abandoned funeral home into a haunted house, calling the idea distasteful and insensitive. The Preston Marsh Funeral Home had been scheduled for demolition, and the owner gave permission to students from Logan Rogersville High School to use it at the end of October to raise money for a safe graduation celebration for seniors. Students said they would use leftover equipment such as gurneys to enhance the spooky experience, but one Rogersville resident said doing so is akin to opening a strip club in an old church. Well, first of all, there have been churches turned into strip clubs, and in one case, a strip club turned into a church, so that point is moot. But seriously, some people take things just a little too seriously. All the kids wanted to do was put the fun back in funeral. The owner was fine with it. The building was vacant. What's the problem? I'm just reminded of the words of one of my favorite songs. Every party needs a pooper. That's why we invited you. Party pooper. Party pooper. Yes. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? There's a lot of controversy surrounding football these days and what goes on inside the stadiums, but let's leave that alone for now and look at something that takes place outside, tailgating. Whether you're hanging out in the stadium parking lot of your favorite college or NFL sports team, you want your tailgate setup to be the envy of everyone walking by. Peter Lincoln, one of the two brothers who runs the American Tailgater Company, has what you need that no serious tailgater should be without. He joins us on the line right now from Ohio. Hi, Peter.
How's it going, Peter? Thanks for having me on today.
Appreciate it. Thanks for being on the program with us. How did this start, your company, the American Tailgater?
It actually started as my brother's, he was in business management school, graduate school in Kellogg University, a part of Northwestern University, and he started, we used to go to Northwestern tailgates together, and so he did a case study for one of his marketing classes and found this massive untapped market of passionate football fans who literally just go to these football games, not even to go to the game, but to tailgate. And we found this massive untapped market, and that was back in 1997, so 20 years later, it's still going strong.
What is it about tailgating that is so infectious? I mean, I'm up here in Canada, and there's not a lot of tailgating going on here, but I've driven down to Buffalo to see the Bills play, and it's a zoo, and it can be very cold outside in Buffalo with the winds coming off Niagara Falls, yet there is an infectious attitude toward the whole idea of tailgating. How do you describe that phenomenon?
Well, it's exactly that. It's a phenomenon. You mean when the you'll look at certain tailgates. I mean, Northwestern football wasn't that good, and people they won't even be going into the games. They'd be coming to the parking lot 4 hours before game started, and they would just never go in. And I think it's just the camaraderie and the community that people can go to this parking lot, hang out, party for a few hours, and just forget about everything else and all the nonsense. And like you said earlier before we started was. Nowadays, there's a lot too much drama in a football game to go in there and actually enjoy it. So you might as well just stay in the lot and hang out and grill and cook with your friends. And I think that's the best part about it is the community and the people that, you know, it's just everyone's in the same mood and happy. And there's none of that BS surrounding that we can find in the world today.
It almost sounds, the way you describe it, that tailgating is an early version without the negative parts of what social media is these days, a sense of community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's even more so than that because now with social media, we don't need to get into that, but there's a lot of negatives that can be associated with that. But, yeah, it's just a sense of community. It brings people together, from people from diverse backgrounds. And you can just walk. My favorite part about being in a tailgate is you can be walking around the parking lot and go to pretty much any spot, and someone's going to hand you a beer, give you a burger, and they'll start up a conversation, and you've never met the man or woman in your life.
I have actually experienced that. It's quite invigorating. So, as I said in the introduction, you and your company, the American Tailgater, has what no serious tailgater should be without. So, let's go through some of the basics. What do you need for a good tailgate party?
Okay, this is right up our alley. We've actually developed like an ultimate tailgating guide. You can find it on our Facebook page. It is the American Tailgater Company is the tag. And first off, besides the people, bring your friends to the tailgate. Everyone needs, I think, there's probably about five essentials. You're going to need a grill. And I suggest a portable, either propane or butane grill, because the charcoal can get very messy. And actually, some parking lots don't even allow that anymore due to the open flame policies. You can find those on our website, americantailgater.com. You're going to need a tent. And specifically, you're going to need a tent or chairs with your team's logo on it. And we provide, we're NFL, NCAA, NASCAR, NHL, MLB merchandise. We're officially certified with all that. So you can all find that on americantailgater.com. And I think the best part about it, I think you're going to need, aside from those basic products, you're going to need some food and you're going to need the beer and some of the alcohol and beverages to keep your tailgating patrons happy. So for beginner tailgaters who maybe haven't done it as much, you can never go, you know, besides everyone first thinks about burgers and hot dogs and the brats and the simple stuff like that. That's all great, but you can never go wrong with breakfast food, especially for those noon games when you're getting to the lot at 10 a.m. Just cook up some egg sandwiches. You can find a lot of the recipes on our Facebook page too, and Instagram page. We post those all the time.
So feel free to take a look at, for any of the listeners out there, AmericanTailgater.com. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, Pinterest.
The idea of food, I'm getting, my mouth is watering just listening to what you're describing, but I'm just wondering, since you are the American Tailgater Company, you cover the country, are there regional favorites? Are there things you get in some places that you don't get in others, or there are things that some places are known for more than other places are?
Yes, every tailgate has their has a different culture here in the States. So, for example, I was just down at I was at the University of Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia game a couple weeks ago. We were down there just hanging out with some friends down there in Knoxville, Tennessee. And there's tailgaters from all over the country coming to see this big football game. Ended up being a horrible game. Tennessee got blown out of the water. But anyways, I'd actually hanging out with a lot of people from Maryland. And I didn't know, but like, so the Marylanders, they do the crabs, and their tradition was to make up this delicious crab dip. So here I was sitting in the middle of nowhere, Tennessee, on the Tennessee River, dipping crackers in Maryland crab dip, hanging out with volunteer and Georgia fans. It was just really, really something else. And like you said about the traditions, I think the Bills Mafia, if you've ever heard of, I know you've said you've been down to those games in Buffalo. They have some of the wildest traditions. They're partying and they're, I think they like to burn and break tables. It's one of their things I've seen. And then in Northwestern, up in Chicago, one of our favorite traditions is we do beer can chicken, which is you can find that on our website as well.
I've seen that.
You stick a beer like up the chicken and cook it with the beer cap open. It's almost like a fancier way of like a beer battered brat.
Wow,
so that's what we did. We fry turkeys too. I think that's for our family and the American Tailgater Company. Our biggest signature is the fried turkey. We're the only people you're gonna find that are frying turkeys on game day, in like September and October.
Now, as you described, and I think it's one of the things that people who have never experienced a tailgating, and even those who have, don't really understand the idea that somebody can gather around, have a great meal, and never actually even enter the stadium to watch the game. How do you explain that mindset?
It's just the passion about not even the sport. I think it's going back to the camaraderie. I think my favorite example is when the Rams left Ohio for St. Louis a couple decades ago. The fans every Sunday, even though there was no football team next to in their stadium, they were still going to the parking lot and tailgating. And there's not even a team in the city anymore. And I think that's the ultimate testament to how much Americans and people from all over the world enjoy tailgating before and after games.
Are there places, because you just described one example, are there places where there are tailgating parties where there isn't a game?
Yes, at colleges across the country. For example, our school, our football team is not very good at all. My alma mater, Miami of Ohio, but people still we throw tailgates for football teams that aren't even in the region. You know, there'll be a tailgate for an Alabama Clemson game just because it's just such a popular thing to do. It's just a reason to escape. Most definitely, you do not have to have a sports team to be a tailgate. All you need is a bunch of people, some beer, some food, and a parking lot, what I like to say.
For those who are listening to this and maybe have even experienced a tailgater party, there's a big leap between being part of someone else's tailgater party and forming or starting one of your own. Obviously, the best way to do so is to go to your website and find the information you offer and the tips. But what's the first thing they should think about when making that leap?
When making that leap is you gotta be prepared before you tailgate. If you want to be a serious tailgater and get really into it, you gotta know how to do it right. And that is putting in the time before and after the game to make sure your party and your parking spot is the place to be. And then you're gonna need another product is a flagpole. Let people know where your spot is. You're gonna need two flags. One to support your team and another unique one to let people know whose it is. You know, everyone's going to have the same team flag, but if you have your own unique flag, people are going to be able to find you better. And it's almost like a beacon in the sky. So yeah, becoming prepared, prepare the food the next morning. I mean, the prior evening, so you don't have to leave as little work for game day as possible. Because you want to just enjoy it. You don't want to be setting up and cleaning up the whole time.
Just some of the tips available on your website. You can find out more information by going to AmericanTailgater.com. You also mentioned a Facebook link?
Yeah, Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest. Just American Tailgaters is a tag.
Peter, thank you very, very much for being on the program with us.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Peter Lincoln from the American Tailgater. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0428, and you'll find the link. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Every year, we hold the Wacky Warning Label Contest, and the person who finds the funniest common sense warning label in America wins a prize of $1,000. Over the years, we've seen some pretty hilarious labels, like the one on a motorized go-kart that warned, "This product moves when used," and a fishing lure with huge hooks that warned, "Harmful if swallowed." But did you know that the first wacky label we ever saw came from a Halloween costume? That's right, it was found on a Batman cape. It warned, "Cape does not enable user to fly." Let's be fair, we've had a lot of fun with that one. And when my own boys were young, they appeared on TV shows in France and Japan wearing that cape. The show's hosts asked why there are so many warnings about common sense things in America. The answer is that with all the frivolous lawsuits that product makers have to defend themselves against in the United States, the courts here can sometimes be even scarier than those Halloween costumes. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And digging up a mystery from across the pond, you know him, you love him, and now you have to drive on the left, it's Stuart Nauman. Hi, Stu.
And don't forget to, Peter, don't forget to spell your words like honor with the O-U instead of just a plain O at the end.
Well, I'm Canadian, so I always spell it that way.
Okay, but for those who are not Canadian or not British, you know, we have to keep that in line with this edition of Book Banter because, you know, I'm going to tell you something. When we have conversations before we do our taping for these Book Banter segments for the podcast, you've always recommended to me certain books that you've really enjoyed, certain authors that you've, books you've read, tirelessly and look forward to their next books. And one author in particular that you've always strongly recommended to me was a British mystery novelist, Peter James. And I finally said yes after all the, pushing, cajoling, and recommending. I did buy Peter James' first book, Dead Simple, and you said it's a great book, and the series is terrific. And I read it, and I do agree with you on that one. I just want to, in this sort of like change of pace edition of Book Banter, recommend this discovery that you recommended to me. And I went with your recommendation, and I highly agree with it. And I just wanted to, bring it forward to the listeners here.
Please do. I mean, I've mentioned this before. I had Peter James on this program, and that's how I first discovered his writing. At the time I was interviewing him, he was publicizing his 13th novel. And he was so engaging and such an interesting man to talk to that I decided to go back and just read his first one. I figured I'd read his first one, and it would be, and I'm not the most voracious reader in the world, so I thought it would be some nice summertime reading at the time. I'd pick it up, and I'd read it over a period of a couple of weeks, maybe even over a month, and I started reading it on a Friday night, and it's a 400-page novel, and yeah. When I finished it, the sun was coming up on Monday morning.
Oh, I've read it like doing a couple of press tours on the plane, and it's great plane reading also. But these are books, he's written 13 of them, featuring Brighton Police Detective Superintendent Roy Grace. And the books so far have sold over 18 million copies, which is pretty darn impressive. But the best way to introduce yourself to the world of Roy Grace is obviously read the first book in the series, which is called Dead Simple. And it focuses on Michael Harrison, a successful Brighton businessman who is a bit of a prankster, much to the aggravation of his best friends. And on the night of his bachelor party, 3 days before his wedding, they decide to get back at Michael in a very big way. They throw him into a coffin, seal it, and then bury him alive. Now, however, as his friends leave him 6 feet under for a short while, the friends are killed in a very tragic car accident. So when Ashley Harper, who is Michael's fiancée, decides to contact Detective Grace to investigate her husband Tadeu's disappearance, he goes on the case, and after speaking to Ashley and Michael's business partner, Mark Warren, who was away during the bachelor party, Grace sort of discovers that this is more than just a missing persons case. And it's a race against time for Harrison's life, not to mention a case filled with lots of passion, jealousy, greed, and profit. I mean, P-R-O-F-I-T, profit, that kind of thing.
Right.
Now, Peter James has written and you do agree with me on this one, a terrific detective novel with plenty of thrills and twists that will really have you riveted with every succeeding chapter in this book. It's sort of in the classic, you can't put this book down kind of example. Especially what I found was the harrowing chapters that deal with Michael Harrison's, basically his race against time, as he struggles to free himself from his inevitable demise and grave. And, you feel the claustrophobia when you read those chapters, let me tell you.
Yes, you do.
But also, what was that, Peter?
I said, yes, you do. You definitely
do. Oh, yes. And Detective Grace also, he's portrayed as an honest, always infallible person who is constantly dealing with his own issues, yet he's always determined to do his job as a police detective to solve the cases that are laid in front of him, no matter how many bureaucratic roadblocks are thrown at him. And if you read this book, like Peter and I have, and enjoyed it very much, and I'm sure you'll read the other 12 books in the Detective Grace series, and you hope that they're just as thoroughly engrossing and heart-stopping as the first book.
Oh, yes. I can attest to that. I have not read all 13, but I'm well into the series, and I can't get enough of Detective Roy Grace. He's just great.
He is, and I know you recently gave me a copy of James's latest Grace novel.
Yes.
And I was just wondering, should I just read the other books in succession and wait for the most recent book, or just maybe dive into that recent book?
No, I would read them in succession because there's a story arc that involves Grace's personal life that goes through the books, and you don't want to get ahead of yourself on that.
Okay. So thank you for, because I just wanted to get your take on that before I decided to dive into the new Detective Grace book. And there's even a play production, stage production based on the novel.
Yes,
so
there
it's
is.
Pretty impressive.
Yes. I urge everyone to read Peter James's books. They're great. If I had any complaint with the books, as we get older, our memory isn't what it used to be. And the problem I always have with his books are all of the titles are so similar, and the word dead is in every single one, that I sometimes forget the one I'm reading. It's like, okay, there's Dead Simple. they're all very similar in title.
Oh, exactly. So it's like, it's almost like a caveat emptor. Just be observant and just be very careful when you decide to read your next Grace, Detective Grace novel, that you get the right one.
Yes.
Don't be fooled by the similar sounding dead titles.
Exactly. So this week's book is
Dead Simple by Peter James. It's published in paperback by Pan Books, and it's $18.99.
And what do you recommend besides the other 12 books, which you've already mentioned? That is within this genre.
Well, I, speaking of detective series and constant character, let me recommend one of the first detective novel series that I've ever read was actually the Mickey Spillane Mike Hammer books.
Ah, yes.
Which the first one was published way back in 1947, and he has sold, during the height of the Mike Hammer books, the popularity from let's say 1947 to about 1960. Sold in the millions, especially at the time when they were more readily available in very inexpensive 25-cent paperbacks. And I read them when I was in my teens, and I found them, they're very, hard-hitting, hard-boiled detective novels. And it's just a lot of violence, mystery too, some great twist endings sometimes. And if you can get them at a secondhand store, by all means, get them. I recommend my two favorite are Eye of the Jury, which was the one that really established Mickey Splaine as a hard-boiled detective writer, and Vengeance is Mine, which is probably has one of the most twisted endings ever in any of his books, and it was published in the early 50s. And also, New American Library, Miss Blaine's original paperback publisher, has taken all of Mike Hammer books and published them in omnibus large format paperback editions. So each omnibus edition has three Spillane novels in them. So it's a new way to appreciate Mickey Spillane and his Mike Hammer novels, and those are readily available in bookstores now.
Excellent. So again, this week's book is?
It's called Dead Simple by Peter James, which introduces Detective Roy Grace, published by Pan Books, and it's $18.99 in trade paperback.
And again, I urge people to read all 13. How can people find you, sir?
Well, you won't find me across the pond in Brighton, that's for sure, solving cases with Detective Grace, but more down-to-earth here back home at in the Montreal Times, in the pages of the Montreal Times. It's online at www.mtltimes.ca or in print, which appears every Saturday.
Thank you very much, sir. Stuart Nullman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about out of racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We do have an Idiot of the Day coming your way in a few moments, and I've got a few more Stuff File news stories that I want to share with you. But before we get to that, just want to say very quickly, speaking of books, which Stuart was just talking about, on Saturday, November the 4th, from noon to 3 p.m., I'll be doing a book signing in Kingston, Ontario. I'll be signing copies of my book, Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars. The signing takes place at Novel Idea Bookstore. That's at 156 Princess Street in Kingston. And if you don't know about my book, it contains a myriad of celebrity interviews I've done over the years with the likes of Cloris Leachman, Ed Asner, Christopher Plummer, George Takei, Tippi Hedren, Steve Allen, and many, many more. So I hope to see you at Novel Idea. And if you can't make it, but you still want to get your hands on the book, you can find it at Amazon.com or Amazon.ca. You can also find it at my publisher's website at BearManorMedia.com. And you'll find the links to all of those on my website at TheStuffFile.com. Well, let's get back to the stuff, shall we? Sheriff's deputies were summoned to a home in Bay City, Michigan, after a swingers party got violent. 28-year-old Amber K. Schumacher was jealous when her 33-year-old husband had a tryst with another woman while she was similarly engaged with the homeowner's fiancé, which is pretty much the point of a swingers party, isn't it? Anyway, Amber allegedly jumped into her minivan, jumped the curb, and tried to run over her husband. When deputies arrived, she allegedly had a screwdriver in her hand. Her husband was bleeding from his forehead, and witnesses say she had almost run down two other men. Amber also admitted she had drunk a half bottle of vodka, which police say spiked her blood alcohol level to 0.156%. She was arrested for drunk driving, domestic violence, and three felony counts of assault with a dangerous weapon. Her husband was also arrested, charged with violating a protection order requiring him to stay away from his wife. But, Your Honor, he was avoiding her as best he could, wasn't he? Anyway. In Vero Beach, Florida, a husband and wife made a hot bet on the Dallas Cowboys versus Green Bay Packers football game that took place on October the 8th. The loser would set their team's jersey on fire. When the Packers won, the 27-year-old husband took his blue and silver Cowboys jersey outside and set it on fire. But, as he later told sheriff's deputies, because he was drunk, he then tried to put the jersey back on. And that's when things got heated. Family members pulled the burning jersey off the man and rushed him to the Indian River Medical Center. A witness told the Sebastian Daily skin was hanging off his arm and back. He suffered second and third degree burns to his hand, arm, and back. How about damn Cowboys, huh? Yeah, he was so drunk at the time, so I won't and can't make him the idiot of the day, but wow. What a flaming moron. But folks, it is now the time you've all been waiting for. It's time now for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff file presents the idiot of the day.
A 19-year-old man in Japan decided that his crime of choice would be to target a recycle shop, a store that deals in secondhand goods. His plan started out strong as he entered the shop at around 11:40 a.m. and pretended to browse the wares. Taking advantage of a moment when the employee's eyes were off him, the man slipped a speaker, which the store was selling for the equivalent of about $165 U.S., into his bag and nonchalantly making his escape by strolling out the exit. So far, so good. But now he needed to convert the hot speaker into cold cash. So the obvious way to do this, of course, would be to sell the speaker to a recycle shop, since the secondhand merchants are accustomed to purchasing items without documented proof of ownership and generally pay sellers on the spot in cash, thus minimizing the paper trail. Ready to move into his endgame, the man removed the price tag from the speaker and headed for a recycle shop. Or perhaps we should say he headed for the recycle shop, as in the exact same store he had stolen the speaker from just 7 minutes ago. The man walked up to the clerk and said he'd like to sell a speaker. The clerk, showing off his completely ordinary memory capabilities, recognized it as having been in the shop until just a few minutes ago, and promptly called the police, who came and arrested the man on theft charges. Since legal adulthood begins in Japan at the age of 20, and as I mentioned earlier, he was only 19, the would-be speaker scammer's name has not been released, but the accused has admitted to the charges. Now, why, oh why, would you steal from a store and then try to resell said merchandise back to the same store only 7 minutes later? Wow, well, one reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0428. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0428. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check us out on Patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. I'm your announcer, your name here. Oh, I'm sorry. This is Ben Patrick Johnson. What am I being paid for this? What? You're flipping kidding me. Okay, that's it. Turn off the microphone.